Fasten your chin strap and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
Welcome back into the Eric Ainge Show. Appreciate you tuning in to us. We're brought to you by Mortgage Investors Group. And listen, even right now, MIG stands ready to serve you and your home financing needs. They've been around for 31 years. And times like this, it's good to have their experience. You can get pointed in the right direction for all of your home loan leads needs at MIGonline.com.
All right, Eric, it's Wednesday. I had to double check that. It is Wednesday, and it's 11 o'clock, which means it's time to play a little bit of over-under. Joel Silverberg dishes them out. What do you have for us today, Joel?
The number of quarterbacks to start a game this year for Georgia, the over-under set at 1.5.
See, this is interesting because you have Jamie Newman coming in as a grad transfer. You have some talented kids already on campus. And without spring practice, there was not a good opportunity for the grad transfer, who some believe can be a game changer, some we're a little more skeptical. There's not a chance for him to seize the job. Does Kirby get antsy if one of his quarterbacks gets off to a slow start? I think he does, so I'm going to take the over. I'm going to say at least two quarterbacks start this year for Georgia.
I'm going to take the over just because of the injury factor. Just so many different factors could go into something like that. Also, if you have, you know, a Juwan Jennings wildcat situation on the first play of the game, like, believe it or not, the way that those statistics work, it's who lines up under center on the first offensive play of the game. So it is. Personally, I think the quarterback record needs to work like, you know, pitchers in baseball. You know, who's on the field when the game winning scores? Man, I get that there's a lot of factors that go into it, that, and that's a total argument for another day, but I'm going to take the over because what if Newman gets injured? What if he's not ready? You know, what if there's another senior quarterback on the team that they want to take the first snap of the game and senior day? You know, just all this different stuff. So I'm going to take the over.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over too. And I don't even know that I would say getting antsy. I mean, their margin for error at Georgia right now is zero. They need to win all the games they play to be where they and their fans want to be. So they need to be a 12-0 team. Last year, you saw them. They were an 11, weren't they 11-1 regular season? I'm pretty sure their only loss was South Carolina.
South Carolina.
Yeah. And look what happened to their year. You know, I mean, obviously LSU in the SEC championship, but they can't afford another South Carolina this year. So if you're at halftime, it's not like Jeremy Pruitt. Jeremy Pruitt could not afford to let Brian Maurer work through his freshman slump mistake, forcing the ball down the field, doing what all freshmen do at some point in time. That Kentucky game, Maurer's lucky he even made it to halftime, because you're sitting there getting beat by Kentucky and you're Pruitt going, okay, so it's been two quarters. What if another quarter goes by and he's still doing it? What if a quarter and a half goes by and he's still doing it? You know what I mean? You sit there and you start going, we have to have better play at the position this second. It may already be too late. So, I mean, you may see, I don't have their schedule pulled up off the top of my head, but you might see them start two quarterbacks anyway if they don't know who the better guy is.
All right, number two.
Number two, number of inappropriate jokes made by Mike Leach during sensitivity training, the over-under at 2.5.
Well, obviously we have no way of actually verifying this, but I am going to take the over. I don't think Mike Leach could even keep it together for one sensitivity tour. So I'm going to say he continues to wear out his welcome by saying something insensitive. Though he is a history buff, I think he makes a joke. It's probably a well-informed one, and that's it.
I'm going to take the under. I think it was an honest mistake on his part, and I think he knows that if it had been interpreted that way, he wouldn't have tweeted the meme in the first place. I do think he's being sincere, and we've seen Mike Leach in situations like this in the past. We know that he can be sincere. He's a quirky guy. He's a funny guy, but we have seen moments when he has been sincere, when one of his quarterbacks tragically committed suicide last year, the year before. Mike Leach was very distraught, very sincere in discussing the situation. And I think this is something that through social media has been blown out of the water. I'm not saying that Mike Leach is going to be successful, but I think he's going to learn his lesson, so I'm going to take the under.
Read the question one more time, Brian.
The number of inappropriate jokes made by Mike Leach during sensitivity training, the over-under at 2.5.
2.5. I'm going to say under because he's going to be on such a short leash that he wouldn't dare open his mouth. That'll be like it'll be like a driver's ed class. You just don't say anything and you'll get your license.
That's not a bad way to think of it.
All right, number three. ESPN and CBS are running Masters Classics all week. The number of rounds you'll watch, the over-under at 1.5.
I'm going to take the over because watching even Classic Masters is going to be therapeutic. It's scenic if it's nothing else. And here's the thing. I don't necessarily remember who won each one. So unless they're running a thing at the bottom that says, relive Tiger Woods' great win, I'm not going to remember. So give me a Masters final round. I'll take at least two of them.
I can't. I'm probably going to take the under just because it's probably not going to be the full two. Like, could I see one depending on which year it is? Yes, potentially, but I'm probably not going to watch a full two, so I'll take the under.
I'm for sure taking the under. I just looked at the weather forecast for the rest of the week, into the weekend, up here where we're at in Maryland, and it's going to be a spotty shower on occasion, but it's going to be 60s and 70s and nice. So I'll be riding four-wheelers and going bass fishing and building bonfires and playing bocce ball in the grass. I'm going to teach Fallon how to ride her bike without training wheels. She's 7, and she still has to have training wheels on her bike because she is too stubborn to admit that it's not cool to have training wheels. She's trying to convince me that it's cooler to have training wheels because nobody has them. She called them exclusive. I was like, wow, you need to be in. You'll be a lawyer someday.
All right, number four. Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick and others have said they don't want games played without fans in college football. That said, how many college football games are played without fans? The over-under, 10.5.
10.5 is a good number because if one school says we're not having fans at our games, you get 5. If two schools say that, you hit the over. I think there are two schools in America that will say we are going to have games, but we will not have fans there, so I will take the over. I do think, though, by and large, college football will wait until it's safe for fans to be there to play because the TV revenue is going to be there anytime they play. I think enough schools need the ticket sales and the ticket revenue in order to fund their department. So I will take the over, but I don't think it's a lot of schools.
So are we talking, I guess we should clarify, the 10.5, are we talking about total games or total weeks games. Of games?
Total games.
So 1 week would essentially hit the over.
If you said 1 week of no fans, I don't think that's going to happen. I think there are going to be some schools that will individually say that they don't want to have fans there.
Because if we're going by total games, then I'll take the over because nobody's going to MAC games or Sun Belt games anyway. That's an average Saturday in the Sun Belt. Come on.
Yeah, that's true.
Outside of Appalachian State and Georgia Southern.
Tuesday night action.
I'm going with you on this one, Brian. I think they'll end up waiting and getting fans back in. That's what I think.
The over, but just barely.
Yeah.
All right,
last item today was scheduled to be the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Number of NHL playoff games actually played this year, the over-under set at 24.5.
What's the latest on this?
Gary Bettman made a statement yesterday saying that basically he's acknowledging that it may not be possible to complete the regular season. But in terms of a timeline, didn't really give any details. That's what he said on NBC Sports last night.
You may not want to have the regular season, but you could still have the playoffs. I do think it'll be a shortened playoff schedule. I think they won't play full 7-game series, at least in every round, but I will take the over. I think they will find a way to get the playoffs done. I think they want to award a Stanley Cup. though he has been on record before saying that he doesn't want to compromise the start of next season in the timeline, I think ultimately they will. They'll start next season a little late because they want to get the Stanley Cup awarded for this year. So I'll take the over.
Yeah, I'll take the over as well, especially with, I think, a couple of new markets added into the mix with St. Louis and Las Vegas recently having Stanley Cup playoff success. You have Washington back into the fold from winning the Cup a couple years ago. So I think with that in mind, they will play 25 games or more, even if they don't finish out the regular season, because they're not going to condense it to the point where you're playing fewer than that. Could I see best of three or best of five series in the first round? Probably, but I don't think they're necessarily going to condense it to like a four-team playoff. So if they don't finish the regular season, I'll still take the 25 games or more.
Yeah, I'll take the over on this one too, just selfishly, because I really hope it happens. I didn't realize how much I missed having hockey on the TV on weeknights, 7:30, if their Caps are playing on the West Coast. I mean, you could get it as late as 10 o'clock or so. We had it on the TV every single time they were on. I mean, we bought the NHL package on DirecTV so we could watch all of them. It just, we need hockey back. And then the NBA playoffs too, man. I mean, they need to do whatever they need to do, test people, quarantine them in a hotel or whatever you need to do. Hockey players are tough, and they play back-to-back day games all the time during the season. So you could probably get this in a slightly faster than normal mode.
All right, that's how we play over under. We'll come back here on the Eric Haines Show, 656-9900, if you want to join us.
Welcome back into the Eric Haines Show with Brian Rice, 656-9900, if you want to join us. Appreciate everybody tuning in. Don't forget, you can always just subscribe to the podcast of the Eric Haines Show on iTunes or get them straight off the website, 991thesportsanimal.com. Whatever you want.
Tom Brady went on the Howard Stern Show this morning. He says he has no resentment towards Bill Belichick. There's a lot to unpack. He was on for over an hour with Howard Stern this morning. And without having heard the full audio, don't want to dive too deeply into it, but the first headline that comes out of it is that he says he doesn't have any ill will or animosity towards his own team.
But I mean, do you believe it? I mean, that's the thing. Like, I believe him that he's a mindful enough person to know that what they did has never been done before, and I guarantee the respect level is through the roof. So whether he, like, you can want to be separate from somebody that you respect, you know what I mean? I think for me, it's less about Brady and all the reasons he was mad or upset or disgruntled, and it's more about him wanting to push a legacy of, I could do it with more than just Bill Belichick. I think it's as much a personal journey situation, family situation. I mean, I know he talked about his wife Giselle in there too. I haven't listened to it yet.
Yeah, because it happened while we were on air, so we haven't unpacked the whole thing. And we'll get into that a little more tomorrow when we have had the chance to go through the whole thing. But the first headline: no animosity, and I don't believe it. I believe, because he also said that he knew at the beginning of last year that he was going to get out and that this was probably going to be his last year with them. So I think there has to be some animosity there based on that as it comes in. So it's going to be interesting.
You want to know my number one reason why I think Brady resents Belichick?
Yeah.
And I think that he obviously tried to get past it last year, but the season playing out the way it did. Last year was the first year. Now, Brady's played without Gronk at times during seasons. You know, he did get hurt a lot. And he was always banged up even when he was playing. Guy's a warrior. But the real beef, the real problem was Belichick and Gronk. You know, Belichick hated the bro so hard, party bus, Gronk, you know, that's not Bill Belichick's thing. And he always lumped Brady and Gronk together. And, you know, like Brady and Edelman together, I don't think you're not going to hear a word from Bill Belichick. But Brady and Gronk, yeah, I mean, Gronk's, he's kind of that party boy, playboy type guy. It is what it is. I mean, that's why he's so popular and everybody loves him. I don't think that vibed with Belichick. And I think Gronk had enough of dealing with that when they won the Super Bowl, it was really easy for him to call it quits. Because Gronk, I mean, he could have played another 3 to 5 years if he would have wanted to. I mean, he for sure had 3 to 5 more years of at least really, really good football. Maybe not the best tight end in the game, but really, really good football. And because I think Brady thinks that he retired early because he was just over playing for Bill Belichick and the Patriots, and he'd already made enough money and won the Super Bowls and blah, blah, blah. And I think Brady looks at Belichick and resents him for how last season played, because in Brady's mind, Gronk should have been there. Now, I just made all of that up, and that comes from nowhere but my own brain. But I know that if I were in Tom Brady's shoes with the scenario I just laid out, I would for sure resent Bill Belichick.
Yeah, I think he resents him. I think he is. And he said in the interview that he's very respectful for what he did. And, you know, he agrees with the people that say he wouldn't have accomplished everything that he did without Bill Belichick because he took a chance on him as a late-round draft pick. But I think he says the right things, and I think he believes that. That doesn't mean that there isn't still animosity there for all those reasons.
Like, I don't think the Bucks and the Patriots play regular season, but wouldn't that be awesome if they did?
I would love to see that.
Surely we would have heard that if that was a thing.
Yeah, the NFL schedule hasn't been released, but they are not on their rotation for this year. Is the NFC South and the AFC East are not matched up in this scheduling rotation. I don't know what it turns to next year in the second year of his two-year deal in Tampa, but we can hope. Hope. I would love to see it. Speaking of animosity, Kevin Garnett has told the Minnesota Timberwolves he does not want them to retire his jersey.
This is did you see what he actually called the owner?
Yes.
You cannot say it on the air.
No, but he has not forgiven owner Glenn Taylor for their split back in 2016. I had forgotten this, but Kevin Garnett came back to the Timberwolves to try to be like a leader, guider guy. But he said this, quote, "Glenn knows where I'm at. I'm not entertaining it. First of all, it's not genuine. Two, he's getting pressure from fans and I guess the community there. Glenn and I had an understanding before Flip Saunders died, and when Flip died, that understanding went with Flip. For that, I won't forgive Glenn. I won't forgive him for that. I thought he was a straight-up person, a straight-up businessman, and when Flip died, everything went with him." Unquote. Saunders had brought Garnett back to Minnesota in the trade in 2015, and they had talked about KG eventually becoming a minority owner in the franchise. When Saunders died, the Wolves moved on with new leadership. They did so without Garnett.
I mean, I don't blame Garnett for being mad. I love KG, man. I still have his the pair of shorts he wore during the 2008 NBA Game 6 championship game. I, like, have the actual shorts that he wore, because he'd already changed and thrown them on the floor, and I just went and swiped
those
them.
Those are mine now, yeah.
Yeah, they're, guess what? They would be pants on you.
Yeah, of course they would. He's a giant. I mean,
they're too big for me to even wear and look respectable.
It's because the NBA players are just, well, professional athletes are just different.
And yes, I did wash everybody. Them.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Some people are big. Some jersey collectors are big on the unwashed, and that's a no deal for me.
I mean, if you're gonna frame it.
Doesn't matter.
I got my father-in-law, I'm looking at it right now. It's in his conference room. I got him a pair of autographed Wranglers by Brett Favre. Is that not the coolest gift to a father-in-law ever. He has it framed in his building.
That is pretty cool.
It's a pair of Wranglers folded up, and it's got Brett Favre on the butt cheek. Right about where his tattoo is. I would know.
Yeah, you would.
It's weird.
The money quote from Kevin Garnett. Let me give you his full how he finished things. My years in Minnesota in that community I cherish. At this point, I don't want any dealings with Glenn Taylor or Taylor Corp or anything that has to do with him. I love my Timberwolves. I'll always love my guys. I'll always love the people who were with me there. I'll always have a special place for the city of Minneapolis and the state of Minnesota in my heart. But I don't do business with snakes. I don't do business with snake blanks. I try not to do business with openly snakes or people who are snake-like. All right, then.
Whoa. So, KG, tell me how you really feel.
Yeah, don't hold back. Don't hold back. This is the time for everybody to express their feelings. And boy, did he. Yikes. 656-9900 if you want to join us here on the Eric Ainge Show. When we return, more college coaches saying and doing dumb things and smart things. Mac Brown was a rare voice of reason in this over the last few days. That's next on the Eric Ainge Show.
Appreciate you sticking with us here on the Eric Ainge Show. Taking you all the way to the top of the hour, taking you to noon like we do every day here on the EA Show. Brian Rice is back in his home studios, probably getting pretty accustomed to being there. I'm at IHD, Instant Hardware Delivery, in Gaithersburg, Maryland. Why? Because it's my father-in-law's business, and I have my very own conference room with a window. How about that?
So yeah. Are they all working from home up there as well?
They have an essential business, so he has to come in here and work because they do, like, locks for stores, grocery stores, Lowe's, Home Depot, the government. So if someone needs a fancy lock for a door or security door or anything like that, they have to be able to get it to them.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So there are people around where you are, but they gave you the conference room. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I'm by myself in the conference room, though. Just me.
Yeah, that's a scary place to be, but here we are. Mac Brown yesterday was on the Paul Feinbaum show, and unlike some of his coaching counterparts, he tried to be positive while also being very realistic and being very calm about the situation. He said this, quote, "So for my mindset, and I really believe this, I think we'll play in the fall. A lot of people don't. I have no clue because I'm not a doctor, and I can't see us playing without fans because if it's not safe enough for the fans, then it's not safe enough for the players. So I think if everybody's doing what they're supposed to do, follow the guidelines, and I'm really trying, it's hard for all of us, but keep your social distancing, wash your hands, and don't go out unless you really, really have to or need to." What do you think of his statement? Because I've heard several people say this, and I can't say that I'd necessarily disagree about playing without fans, that if it's not safe enough in a contact sport like football for fans to attend, then it's probably not safe enough for players to be around each other.
I just think that when we talk about sports coming back, because they're going to come back, we all know that eventually this is going to go away. It'll have a lasting impact, but we will get back to the old norm if that's, you know, as close to as possible. It's going to happen. When, who knows? But of all the sports that are not being played right now, the one that has to have fans is college football. I mean, you could get away with it in some of the group of five, you know, the other conferences. You could get away with it. You could get away with it really even in the Pac-12. Maybe. Not all the Big 12 schools. Some of the Big 12 schools. None of the Big 10 schools. Maybe Northwestern. You might be able to get away with it at Northwestern. Most of all of the ACC schools, you couldn't do it. And for sure, all of the SEC schools. You know how weird it would be doing a Vol walk and it being a ghost town? It's weird enough.
They just wouldn't do it. They just pull the buses up to underneath. But yeah.
I'm just saying, though, it's weird enough doing a Vol walk when it's only kind of crazy. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, like noon game.
Yeah, noon game in the first year of Pruitt, Vol walk. You know, it's just very underwhelming. That's weird enough for me to see. I just can't imagine the band not being there, the Vol walk not happening, the tailgate scene not going on. Like, that's just, it's as much a part of the football game that we love as the actual football game.
If there was a game going on at Neyland Stadium and there were no fans, which I don't think that there's any chance that happens, people would still go out and tailgate in the parking lots, I guarantee it. They might have to threaten to tow them and threaten to get rid of them, but
there gosh, would be... I would feel so bad for all of the on-duty law enforcement on a game day if there's a game happening and you're not allowed to go to the game. I mean, you might legitimately have riots. That might be when you have... I mean, we had people show up and protest because we just were going to hire a football coach that we didn't want to be the football coach. Yeah. Imagine if there's no football to go watch. I mean, think of all the Tennessee fans. One of my favorite things about the job that we have, you know, having been, I'm retweeting one of the Tennessee football account, just put a Ainge to Meacham was on fire that day. Their little first, what is it here? The Chevrolet look back or whatever they call it. Yeah. Ainge to Meacham connection against Kyle was fire. And it's just showing him and my highlights together. And like the reason that that happened like that was because of how crazy Neyland was. We knocked the guy out of the game on the opening kickoff and we just physically beat them up so early, so bad, and they couldn't communicate. Their poor, I think Long, the guy, Nate Longshore, does that sound right? Quarterback? Yes. I think that's it. Yeah. He could not hear anything. I mean, I remember playing in Neyland in the 04 Florida game, 109,000 plus, largest crowd in Neyland Stadium in Tennessee football history. And I got to be a part of it. And the 06 Cal game at kickoff and when we scored those first couple touchdowns was not only louder, significantly louder.
Yeah.
And rabid. I mean, remember, we were the number three team in the country the year before that, and we won 5 football games. So
we were desperate for success.
The fans had all that pent-up energy and aggression. The players had twice as much as the fans did. I mean, it literally was like getting shot out of a cannon. We would have done that to anybody we played that day. I genuinely believe that, within reason. But I mean, we would have for sure won that football game no matter who we played that day. And a big part of that is the environment from the team driving, you know, the away team driving from the airport Hilton to campus, through campus. Going into the stadium during pregame warmups. I mean, the student section was all there. They were not. If you were at the 06 Cal game, then you probably agree with me. Were you there, Brian?
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was insane. I mean, I rarely ever did the quiet down thing to the fans.
Yeah.
That wasn't really my jam. I don't think it affects things enough to do that if you're in control and you know what you're doing. But normally in Neyland, when you're calling a play in a huddle, the tone I'm using right now is the tone that you would use. You'd walk in the huddle. Hey guys, you know, 11, 11, 11, you walk in the huddle, say any quick reminders you need to say to anybody. And then it's, hey, double right gun, F zip, ace right Cobra, drive Y corner on one, ready break. Call, and like you can call it like that, like with this voice, because when you're on offense, our fans are smart and they get quiet and you can hear a pin drop. On the flip, the defense can't communicate at all when that's happening. And we were used to it and they weren't, and it killed them in that game. They literally were not a functioning football team inside Neyland Stadium that day.
And Tennessee won because
Jeff
of
it. Jeff Tedford was for sure not prepared for the environment his team was going to play in that day. That they were completely unprepared. Well, so I can't imagine playing these games. You know, like when we go to Norman, Oklahoma this year to play football, part of the intensity of the football game is the environment of the road game you're going to play on. If there's nobody there and you're still going to play, it'll feel like a scrimmage. It'll be weird. I don't want to do that.
And I think I think Mac Brown's right, though, without fans in the stands, if you're telling people it's not safe enough for people to attend, then, you know, how do you know that it's safe enough for your players to get with? You've had a control of your players, but you haven't had control of all the players on every team you're going to play. And so I think that's a tough thing to sell, that it's okay for us to play, but it's not okay for people to come watch it in a sport like football, where you have 85 guys going toe-to-toe for that long of a time. I think if you get in the baseball plan where you can quarantine, or a basketball or a hockey plan where you can quarantine everybody that's a participant, yeah, you may be able to play without fans. I just don't think that's realistic in football, and I don't think that's what teams, coaches, athletics directors want to do. So I'm with Mac Brown. I think we will play, but it'll be when it's safe, and you hope that that's on time in September, but we'll find out when we get a little closer to it. We'll come back and find out what we learned today here on the Eric Ains Show next.
It's time to find out what we learned today on the Eric Ains Show. Every day we do that thanks to Regenerative Complete, regencomplete.com. That's R-E-G-E-N complete.com. Free testosterone test for men. You go in there, it takes 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and you're out the door, and they'll call you with your results. If you're tired, angry, body fat, losing muscle mass, no energy, cloudy, foggy mind, always tired, no energy, then you need to go get a free testosterone test from Regen Complete. Find online, regencomplete.com.
I learned that Mike Gundy is still bad at things. He's bad at getting out what he wants to say. He's bad at... Mike Gundy yesterday came across as, in his 21-minute rant to start a media conference, as somebody who had sat doing nothing but watching various cable news outlets for the last month and is freaking out about it.
Well, I mean, everybody's stressed out right now.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. We're all stressed out. Not all of us are handling it the same way.
No.
That's probably the best way to say it.
When you are a college football – when you're somebody – forget college football coach – when you are somebody that people listen to and put stock in the things that you say, you have to be careful when you talk on these things and not go down the rabbit hole of conspiracy theories and things like he did. You have to be responsible. And I don't know that Mike Gundy understands that, but I think that's part of the reason why he has never left his little comfort zone at Oklahoma State, because he is allowed to be that person there no matter what. How many coaches survive "I'm a man, I'm 40" long term at their school? Not many.
How many head coaches can flirt, have their agent or him or whoever it is flirt with every big time Power 5 job that comes available every year for a decade and get a raise out of it every year after doing it every year, same song and dance? And how many guys are capable of getting their athletic director, their quote unquote boss, fired? I mean, that the list of people that are like him, I would say Alabama, Nick Saban, he could do all those things easy. I bet Dabo could. You know, I mean, yeah, that's, yeah. There's only a few of them. You know, Ryan Day at Ohio State, no. I mean, even some of the other best coaches, you know, with teams, it's just not. It's not very common in college football. Like, I would say Kirby Smart, no. Ed Orgeron, no. Gus Malzahn, no. I mean, I don't really know if there's anybody else in football that you could say that about.
No, and you know, when we said that back when we first started doing this, who could make a change to put Tua in the second half of a national championship game? The list is two. The list is Saban and Dabo. You know, Saban at least understands what his role is in the world, where when he says something, he had better be right because people put stock in it. And that's why I like what Mac Brown said. He gave the situation an appropriate amount of respect and all that before saying, hey, I want to get back to this. But unlike some of the other people, Dabo being another one, Dabo said some things that he's been criticized for, and then he doubled down on them yesterday. It makes you appreciate the Mac Browns of the world and, frankly, the Nick Sabans of the world that know their words carry weight, so they choose them carefully rather than at least coming off as flippant like some other coaches have done.
What else did we learn today?
I learned that
about the SEC and how good it is on defense in the NFL draft. There's as many guys in the first round on defense of every NFL draft coming out of the SEC as there are the other four Power Five conferences combined. That's insane. Yeah. That's why the SEC is so much better. Yeah, it means more. Yeah, without fans, it would be weird. But the defensive football units in the Southeastern Conference are just top to bottom so much better than all the other conferences. It's just not close.
Yeah, and the thought that after Joe Burrow, we're talking about Chase Young being number two, and then there being a big drop off before your next SEC, before the next non-SEC player. You know, the sheer numbers that you quoted on number of players from SEC schools versus every other conference, well, it was really, it's not surprising, but it is stunning when you see it laid out that way.
Well, and it's also pretty even if you look at offensive players. Now, every draft is unique and different. I think you'll see a lot of SEC offensive players getting drafted in the first round this particular season, but I mean, it's, you know, usually it's an offensive lineman from the Big Ten, the linebacker, two tight ends from the Big Ten, the other, you know, last draft. In the latest mock draft, there's a bunch of different things that have guys going for, you know, C.D. Lamb, Big 12 receiver, you know, SEC receivers. There's running back from Georgia. There's, I mean, you get a lot of skill players, you know, quarterback from Oregon. Who knows, maybe even another quarterback after that. But the bottom line, the SEC on defense is where the big discrepancy is.
And I learned that Tennessee has three players in the 7-round mock draft posted by CBS. Juwan Jennings, Darryl Taylor, and Marquez Callaway. Taylor's going in the 2nd round, Jennings and Callaway in the 7th, based on this mock draft.
My numbers for those guys, I think Darryl Taylor will get drafted in the 2nd to 3rd round, the 33rd to whatever that pick that is, 2nd or 3rd round. I think Jennings will be the next one picked. This is just my value of them. I'm going to say the 4th to the 7th, and I think Callaway is going to be and this is very, very best, probably not likely, but I would say 5th to 7th. I don't think Callaway will go before the 5th round, and I don't think Jennings will go before the 4th round. But if he was there and I had a 4th round draft pick, maybe even a 3rd round pick for me personally, but with a 4th round pick, if I had, especially if I'd already gotten what I needed with my other picks, if I had more, I would absolutely use one of my 4th round draft picks on Juwan Jennings.
Do you want your highlights of Juwan Jennings to be for your team dragging some defenders down the field after he makes a tough catch over the middle, or do you want those highlights to come against you? That's the question that they're going to have to ask themselves.
I think he's really versatile too. I mean, Jennings is a guy, and he'll have such good reviews from all his coaches that ultimately he'll get drafted for sure.
Tomorrow, a big day. We'll have Philip Fulmer, Tennessee's athletic director, and we'll have Scott Carter, ETSU's athletics director, join us on the program. Jesse Smithy from 5-Star Preps in the 9 o'clock hour in Knoxville as well. Angel, talk to you then.
Yeah, buddy.
Joel Silverberg, thank you. Sports 180 next in Knoxville Gym Rome in the Tri-Cities. We appreciate you listening to the Eric Ainge Show. Never try.